from around the globe. In sold-out arenas and humble churches. From out on the streets to your screen. And now, the time and what must be done. On this edition of Farrakhan Speaks.
Greetings to you. I am Minister Louis Farrakhan, National Representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that great preacher of freedom, justice, and equality to the black man and woman of America and the Western Hemisphere, and to the Aboriginal people of the earth, the eternal leader of the Nation of Islam, and a warner to the government and people of the United States of America, and a warner to the nations of the earth. Our subject today, on the 51st edition of The Time and What Must Be Done, is the wheel. That great mother plane, Allah's, God's calling card. We are nearing the end of our year-long series of The Time and What Must Be Done. As I have said in previous broadcasts, we would take up the subject of the wheel. I want to conclude these broadcasts with the wheel. The importance of the wheel, the relevance of the wheel, and what that wheel represents in terms of the attributes of Allah God. In fact, every attribute that is given to the one true God that is found in the Holy Quran is manifested in the wheel, its power, its potential. Everything about it says that God is present now in the world. I believe that the two that back me are pushing me to make known the presence of the two that are on the wheel, the great Mahdi, Master Farad Muhammad, and the Messiah, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who they are and why our representation of them is so important that the world, its leaders, the Pope, all religious leaders and political leaders understand the seriousness of the presence of the wheel and its work. This wheel is so magnificent. This wheel is the manifestation of the presence of God. The wheel is like His calling card. In words, the presence of the wheel says to the world, I want to introduce you to my presence and to who I am. Take my calling card, study it, look at it carefully, and it will bear witness that as Moses was told when he asked God, who should I tell them sent me? And God said, tell them I am that I am. That means I am present, I exist. I have come. So Allah, God, the Son of Man, shows up in a wheel, and He comes down from the wheel, and He finds Elijah, and He teaches Elijah, and oh God, did He teach that man, and He makes Elijah Muhammad into Himself. So even in the 1940s, when that minister, Lucius Bayar, who was the dean of Elijah Muhammad's ministers, At the time, he was a minister of the Seventh-day Adventist faith. And he was sitting with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he asked Elijah Muhammad, "How do you know that the man you met is God Almighty in person?" And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad answered, saying, "Because he made me all up into himself." The Honorable Elijah Muhammad met with and was taught by the great Mahdi, Master Farhad Muhammad, who he said is the manifestation of the presence of God in the world. He pointed out to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, according to Elijah Muhammad's earliest writings, he said, "Master Farhad Muhammad came to us from the holy city of Mecca in Arabia. He pointed out to me a dreadful looking plain, a half a mile by a half a mile. It was made after the universe of spheres, wheels within wheels. And although many had mocked and ridiculed this teaching in America today, according to ABC News blog writer Elon Harish and US News blog writer Seth Klein on June 27th and 28th, and Educating Humanity, an organization which tracks UFO cases, on June 29th, articles report that 36% of Americans, about 80 million people, believe UFOs exist, and a tenth believe that they have spotted or seen one. This report was based upon a National Geographic Channel poll conducted in 2012 about UFOs. The National Geographic poll also showed that 48% of Americans are not sure about the existence of UFOs, and 79% believe there's a government cover-up about UFOs. Scholars, scientists of many disciplines, military people, highly placed individuals in many areas of science, people of every stripe, from presidents of countries and prime ministers to common people, have seen these wheels and have tried to bring it to the attention of the government of the United States of America to release what our government has said is above top secret. There's great interest among the American people and people of the world about this much talked of phenomenon known as UFOs. It is talked about in every country, particularly the countries that hold sway on the earth and who have nuclear arsenals and are engaged in great preparation for this final war. And there are others who have seen and have been so intimidated by our government that they have refused to tell even their wives or their children what they have experienced, and some have taken the secrets of what they know to their graves. Other nations have started letting their people know that such phenomena exists. According to the Disclosure Project, which is a research project working to fully disclose the facts about UFOs, extraterrestrial intelligence, and classified advanced energy and propulsion systems, the following countries released or are in litigation to release their UFO files. As of August 2013, these 24 countries are Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Canada, Chile, China, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, India, Ireland, Japan, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Russia, Spain, Sweden, Ukraine, the United Nations, United Kingdom, Uruguay, and the Vatican City in Rome. But America is the last one. And America refuses because to admit that this phenomena exists, she would be admitting that there is a power that is present that America's power cannot overcome, which then compromises the sovereignty and security, not only of all the citizens of America, but all the citizens of the earth. Whenever a nation is faced with a superior power that possesses a superior weapon that the present world and its war mongers cannot master, then that nation is unable to do the first thing that a sovereign nation must do, and that is to protect and secure her citizens. The protection of every human being on our planet now is threatened by the presence of something that America has been dealing with since 1940, but this great mother wheel has been in existence since 1929. Let me stop here and say that these are not extraterrestrial planes. They are not from outside of the earth. It is written in the Bible, and you go check it for yourself. These wheels rose up from the earth. The intention of these broadcasts is to lay bare the truth of this phenomenon as taught to us by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it is to free all those who have been intimidated and made to look crazy so that they will rise up and join us to tell the world what they have seen and what they have heard and what they have experienced. I'd like to share with you first some historic events that will give you the background that establishes the foundation from which we speak on this subject of the wheel. In Washington, D.C., on February 27, 1990, we met with the editorial board of the Washington Times. And on February 28th, we met with the editorial board of the Washington Post. The owners of these papers and their great editors interviewed and questioned me for several hours. I believe these invitations were extended to me to examine me based upon my experience on the wheel, which I announced 4 months earlier on October 24th, 1989, at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in Washington, D.C. Present at these meetings from the Nation of Islam was myself, our late former editor of The Final Call, Brother Abdul Wali Muhammad, our Eastern Regional Minister, Minister Don Muhammad, Sister Ruth Muhammad, Brother Dr. Abdul Alim Muhammad, Brother Akbar Muhammad, Brother Leonard Farrakhan Muhammad, Brother Mustafa Farrakhan, Brother Abdul Sharif Muhammad, Brother Abdul Arif Muhammad and Brother Jamil Muhammad. Some of those who were present at the editorial board meeting from the Washington Post were Mr. Donald Graham, the son of the owner of the Washington Post, Ben Bradley, senior editor, Meg Greenfield, editorial page editor, and other senior editorial staff. Also present was writer Milton Coleman, a black man that had broken the story of Reverend Jesse Jackson's Hymettown remark referring to the Jewish community in New York that created an intense furor during Reverend Jackson's bid to become the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States in 1984. I had rebuked Mr. Coleman for violating the principle of disclosing a private conversation with Reverend Jackson. Not defending the reported remark, however, I was then falsely accused of threatening Milton Coleman's life. I spoke with Milton Coleman at that time, and he promised to meet with me if I would make known that I did not intend any harm to him or his family. And I said to Mr. Coleman, I said, "Brother, I'll be on the Ted Koppel show tonight, and I will make that announcement from the Ted Koppel show," which I did. And when Mr. Coleman and I were to meet to iron out our differences, the members of the Washington Post senior staff forbade him from meeting with me. So while I was at the Washington Post, I rebuked the owners and senior staff of the Washington Post at this meeting for not allowing Mr. Coleman to meet with me. This is contained in the full audio copy of the interview, which we have. These meetings were of such historic significance that they were published on the very next day on the front pages of the Washington Times and the Washington Post. The words and answers that I gave to their questions was given more space in these national newspapers than any black leader has ever received in the history of these papers. It was as though both the Washington Post and the Washington Times wanted to give the world through their readers a close-up view of a man that had been labeled as a hater, an anti-Semite, and an enemy of America and the white race. We will post both of the interviews on our website that were excerpted in their papers so that you may read and understand how Almighty God Allah was guiding me in dealing with the scribes or writers of this world. They were questioning me in the same manner that Jesus was questioned by the scribes or writers of his day, as it is written of in the Bible. During my interview with the Washington Post on February 28, 1990, I was asked this final question in the interview. The question was, quote, "We've had a chance to go over most of the areas where you have said something in the Post. One that came up in a press conference the last time you were in town that I'm frankly not sure I understand is the business of the wheel." At that press conference, I related my experience with the wheel and made the announcement of President Reagan's plans that were told to me by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Here is a part of my answer to that question during the Washington Post interview, February 28, 1990. I started by saying, you know, I'm very glad you asked that. I was not going to raise it. I was just wondering who would. You know that Louis Farrakhan has been teaching in the black community at that time for 36 years. And he is not known to be a nut and is not known to be insane. And if you have psychiatrists and psychologists at this board meeting examining me and my words, I am sure you could attest to the veracity of that statement. I'd like to just read something before I say what I said. A memorandum dated February 26, 1942, from General George Marshall, U.S. Army Chief of Staff in World War II and Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs from 1947 to 1949. He wrote a memo to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt giving details of a Los Angeles air alarm in February 1942, during which 1,430 rounds of ammunition were fired at unidentified flying objects during a five-hour alarm. President Gerald Ford, in a letter he sent as a congressman to L. Mendel Rivers, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, dated March 28, 1966, said, and I quote, "In the firm belief that the American public deserves a better explanation than that thus far given by the Air Force, I strongly recommend that there be a committee investigation of the UFO phenomena. I think we owe it to the people to establish credibility regarding UFOs and to produce the greatest possible enlightenment on this subject." Former President Jimmy Carter, during his election campaign in May 1976, said, and I quote, "If I become president, I'll make every piece of information this country has about UFO sightings available to the public and the scientists. I am convinced that UFOs exist because I have seen one." Jimmy Carter was elected president, and he never fulfilled that pledge. I'll talk about that later in another broadcast. Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona, in a letter dated March 28, 1975, said, quote, "The subject of UFOs is one that has interested me for some long time. About 10 or 12 years ago, I made an effort to find out what was in the building at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base where the information is stored that has been collected by the Air Force. And I was understandably denied this request. It is still classified." Listen to the words, "above top secret." Not just top secret, but above top secret. Barry Goldwater goes on to say, I have, however, heard that there is a plan on the way to release some, if not all, of this material in the near future. I'm just as anxious to see this material as you are, and I hope we will not have to wait much longer. I don't need to go to Prime Minister Winston Churchill and others throughout the world who say that these things exist. There were 18 of these wheels seen over the White House. The point in this part of my response is we were establishing from the highest government officials the credibility of the existence of the wheel or what you call UFOs. Now, let's go to my press conference of October 24th, 1989, held at the JW Marriott Hotel in Washington, D.C. I open this press conference with the following words. Ladies and gentlemen of the press, brothers and sisters, we are honored by your presence here this morning. I am a man who has great respect for the press and the electronic media, and I also have respect for myself and my mission. As you know, I do not readily submit to interviews, nor am I frequently seen on the television, for I am not before you of myself, nor do I do what I do to be seen of men. Therefore, I have never tried to abuse or misuse the press to seek advantage for myself or the Nation of Islam. Here is a video portion of that press conference. So in calling this press conference, I'm calling you because of the serious nature of the announcement that I am about to make. An announcement on which hangs the future of this nation, its leaders, and the people of America. This is not the usual press conference, though I realize that you may only be able to use a very small portion of what I say if you choose to use it at all. However, I would hope that you record everything that I say, that it may bear a record either for or against you and me. It is written in the book of Ezekiel, when I say unto the wicked, you shall surely die, and you give him not warning, nor speak to warn the wicked from his wicked way, to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at your hand. But if you warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. It is in this spirit that I make this announcement. In a tiny town in Mexico called Tepoztlan, there is a mountain on top of which is the ruins of a temple dedicated to Quetzalcoatl, the Christ figure of Central and South America. A mountain which I've climbed several times. However, on the night of September the 17th, 1985, I was carried up on that mountain in a vision with a few friends of mine. As we reached the top of the mountain, a wheel, or what you call an unidentified flying object, appeared at the side of the mountain And I was called from the wheel to come up into the wheel. Three metal legs appeared from the wheel, giving me the impression that it was going to land, but it never came over the mountain. Being somewhat afraid, I called to the members of my party to come with me, but a voice from the wheel spoke, saying, "Not them, just you." I was told to relax, and a beam of light came from the wheel, and I was carried up on this beam of light into the wheel. I sat next to the pilot. However, I could not see him. I could only feel his presence. As the wheel lifted off from the side of the mountain, moving at a terrific speed, I knew I was being transported to the mother wheel, or the mother plane, which is a human-built planet a half a mile by a half a mile, which the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us of for over 60 years. The pilot, knowing that I was fearful of seeing this great mechanical object in the sky, maneuvered his craft in such a way that I would not see the mother plane, and then backed quickly into it and docked in a tunnel. I was escorted by the pilot to a door and admitted into a room. I shall not bother you with a description of the room, but suffice it to say that at the center of the ceiling was a speaker, and through this speaker, I heard the voice of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad speaking to me as clearly as you hear my voice this morning. He spoke in short, cryptic sentences, and as he spoke, a scroll full of cursive writing rolled down in front of my eyes, but it was a projection of what was being written in my mind. As I attempted to read the cursive writing, which was in English, the scroll disappeared and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad began to speak to me again. He said, and I quote, "President Reagan has met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff to plan a war. I want you to hold a press conference in Washington, D.C. and announce their plan and say to the world that you got the information from me on the wheel," end quote. He said to me that he would not permit me to see him at that time, but he said that I had one more thing to do, and when that one more thing was done, I could come again to the wheel and I would be permitted to see him face to face. He then dismissed me and I entered the small wheel, and the pilot, whom I still could not see, moved the craft out of the tunnel and took it up to a terrific height and maneuvered his craft that I might look down upon the mother wheel, and I saw a city in the sky. With great speed, it brought me back to Earth and dropped me off near Washington, where I then proceeded into this city to make the announcement. After I awakened from the vision, it seemed to vanish from my mind. However, on the morning of September the 19th, 1985, a great earthquake struck Mexico City, and it was felt as far away as Tepoztlan, the little town where I was staying. The earthquake brought the vision forcibly to my mind, and I spoke it later that morning for the first time to my wife, Khadija Muhammad, and to Sister Tineta Muhammad in the city of Cuernavaca in Morelos, Mexico. This was the announcement of my experience with the wheel that the Washington Post editor was referring to in his final question. Now, as I was concluding the press conference, I warned the president and the government against their wicked plans. Please listen to this video segment. In closing, I would like to issue a warning to the president A warning to the government and a warning to the people of the United States of America. If I am in your mind before you of myself, if I am in your mind a hater, an anti-Semite, a wild-eyed radical, then you have nothing to fear from my presence. For I, like those who are actually like that, will go the way that history has decreed for that kind of person. However, if I am in reality in front of you by Allah's divine will, as an extension of the divine warnings given to you from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, then be instructed that you would do well to leave me alone. You would do well. You would do well to leave the Nation of Islam alone and to cease and desist from your evil planning against the future of the black people of America and the world. For the black people of America, though despised and rejected, have now become the people of God, and he has declared that he will fight you for their liberation. Yes, the government would be wise to heed the counsel of Gamaliel in the days of Paul and the early Christians, who advised the rulers of that day with these words, quote, "And so in the present case, I say to you, stay away from these men and let them alone, for if this plan or action should be of men, it will be overthrown. But if it is of God, you will not be able to overthrow it, nor them, or else you may even be found fighting against God. So it is not wise for you to plan against Allah's servants, for by so doing, America, you're planning against yourselves. This warning is for President Bush, the government, the chiefs of staff, and the wise to reflect upon, so that the unwary citizens of America may not be harmed by the consequences of the wicked machinations of the United States government. You may come against me, which you are free to do, since we have no power to stop you. But I warn you that I am backed by the power of Allah and His Christ, and the power of that wheel in which I received this announcement. And the moment you attempt to lay your hands on me, the fullness of Allah's wrath will descend upon you and upon America. And before you will be able to establish your mockery of me, if that is what you wish to do, for what was revealed to me in the wheel, you will see these wheels, or what you call UFOs, in abundance over the major cities of America. And the calamities that America is presently experiencing will increase in number and in intensity, that you might humble yourselves to the warning contained in this announcement or be totally destroyed from the face of the earth. This is a final warning. This is a final warning to you. The ball is now in your court. You may do with it, with me, and with us as you see fit. Thank you for your attention, and may Allah bless each of you with the light of understanding as I greet you in peace, thanking you for being with us this morning. I greet you. Assalamu alaikum. That same night, after I concluded my press conference, it was reported and shown on a Washington, D.C. news station, Channel 9, on live TV, footage of the wheel's presence in Washington, D.C. Take a look at this video footage.
Well, I'm aware it's a contrail of a jet, but I don't think it's a comet. Over here, as the sun is, the comet's tail should point away from the sun because the radiation from the sun should be pushing it back. Also, this object, this would-be comet, is moving too fast through the sky for a comet.
All right, great. Can we do the close-up tape now? We'll take the same one and we run it through our enhancer and kind of blow it up. Now, comets would be visible day after day after for a couple days at least, right?
That's right, exactly. You should see it for many days. It's moving, of course, very, very fast, but as it went through the sky, it would not be moving anything like that. The tail on this does, in fact, look like a comet. It's simply pointed the wrong way, and it's moving too fast.
Okay, what else could... Okay, here's a question. Hold it here. What would cause that?
Well, it could, of course, be a vapor trail from an airplane, and somebody would claim it's a UFO, but I would not say it's that. You should turn to that as the last possible explanation, and I suspect that others can come up with a definition in meteorology.
All right, I don't have any meteorological explanation. I mean, if it was a vapor contrail, there's one thing that blows that theory. That is that this was seen in Baltimore, almost 60 miles away, exactly the same way, at exactly the same time, at exactly the same spot of the horizon. That tells me it can't be a contrail. You can't see that far.
Well, with respect to being a comet, in fact, there is a reasonably bright comet on the horizon, which you could see if you look very carefully, but it's north-northwest, and this appears to be south-southwest. So it's in the wrong place in the sky. And I've checked with the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory and the Naval Observatory, and they're not aware of one, or at least they didn't know when I called them. I don't think that this is a comet.
So what we're left with is, what are your possibilities in order?
Well, first of all, I think you need more data. You need to analyze them better. I'd like to see some photographs from data. You might find that there's a comet that people have not yet reported. You might find that it's somehow related to an airplane. You might find that it's some type of meteor. You find occasionally there are meteors, rocks that are simply going through the sky, what a child would call a shooting star, which will cause a momentary streak of light. It's called a bolide. Perhaps one of those. But I would not say it's a UFO.
Keep you updated. Meanwhile, Bill Kamal will be back with a six-day forecast in just a couple of minutes. Gordon, that's it.
What do you think it is?
I'd go towards the meteor or something breaking up from space, but not neither a contrail or a comet.
You go toward the shooting star theory?
Yep.
Not toward the UFO theory?
No.
Stay with us now as Eyewitness News continues.
And that's what they were. They were jet contrails. They were totally unrelated to what we saw last night. Now, I'm not saying that last night's may not have been a jet. It could have been well, but they were two separate incidents. And tonight, what we saw had nothing to do with last night. On the right, you see a picture of today's definite jet contrail. I watched it myself with a naked eye. On the left is yesterday's Newswatcher tape. Let's roll the Newswatcher's tape just for a moment so we can put it in perspective. The main difference that I see is the last night's image was much brighter and much more billowy than the actual night. Now, the scene I talked with Captain Neiman at the U.S. Space Command at Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado, they track all the debris in space that might re-enter. It does not correlate with the thing they were tracking, so we can rule that out. Dr. Richard Berenson said it was not a comet. We can rule that out. Most likely it was not a meteor. We can probably rule that out. So what we're left with is maybe a real high-flying airplane, maybe a military plane, 78,000 feet, or maybe something from space floating by. There is no indication it's any sort of ship or vehicle from another planet or anything like that. We tried to update it because it was interesting, it was fascinating to watch, and one by one we're eliminating things, and hopefully tomorrow we can put it there. Stay with it. A contrail of some sort that was kind of highlighted or backlighted by the sun. It was very beautiful looking, but that seems to be an indication either from a commercial aircraft or possibly even a military aircraft flying at very, very high altitude. We believe that's what it was, and that's the story. And if there's any more to tell in a few days.
The video footage was not of the highest quality, but it is sufficient to show the presence of the wheel over Washington, D.C. I continued with my response to the Washington Post, and I said to the editorial board, "The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us for nearly 60 years that these planes exist. You called them unidentified flying objects. They're not that to us. They're referred to in the writings of Ezekiel the prophet as the wheel within a wheel that was seen by Ezekiel in a vision 595 years before Jesus was born." And the Washington Post reported on the front page a few years ago, a Japanese pilot, Captain Kenju Terauchi, who is not crazy, who had been flying planes for nearly 30 years, that he saw this not only on his radar, but he monitored this great wheel for nearly an hour and a half between Asia, the Bering Straits, and Alaska. And he drew a picture which the Washington Post put on the front page, comparing his 747 to this huge mother of planes. He said it looked like two huge aircraft carriers in length, which bore witness to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, because the largest aircraft carrier is about 440 yards, a quarter of a mile, and two of them together would be a half a mile. Now, you may say, of course, Elijah Muhammad's dead. How could he speak to you? Since 1981, I have been saying to the world that Elijah Muhammad is not dead. He is alive. I'm saying to the world that Elijah Muhammad is the Messiah that the Quran is speaking of. I am saying to the world what the Quran says of the Messiah. He escaped a death plot against him. Of course, you still may hold on to your thought, Elijah Muhammad is dead. But how could he be dead and he speak to me on the wheel? This is incredible. But remember, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told me the plans of the President of the United States of America and told me it was in the early part of September 1985 that he met with his Joint Chiefs of Staff to plan a war. He didn't tell me who the war was against, but he told me to make known their plans and tell the world that you got it from me, Elijah Muhammad, on the wheel. In that announcement, I said the words that I was instructed to give not only to the world, but to his followers and family. He's alive. He's on the wheel. And he is with Master Farad Muhammad. And he is in power as we speak. Now, Elijah Muhammad wrote a letter to a sister about a death plot against him, and he said, quote, "If Allah had not shown me how I would escape, I would have no hope at all." The Quran bears witness. Look at these words. "And for their saying, we have killed the Messiah, Jesus, son of Mary, the messenger of Allah, and they killed him not, nor did they cause his death on the cross, but he was made to appear to them as such, and certainly those who differ therein are in doubt about it. They have no knowledge about it, but only follow a conjecture, and they killed him not for certain. Nay, Allah exalted him in his presence, and Allah is ever mighty wise." I want to say at this point that I was with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad one day, and he said these words to me. He said, "Brother, when you see me again, the power that you will see me exercising, if I did not tell you that I was not God, you would be found worshiping at my feet." And at another time at his table, he looked me in my face and said these words, "Brother, if Allah can't save me, that's a sign that he cannot save you. As I am standing in his place, And the same malefactors and evildoers that plotted against his life are now plotting against mine. But as I know Allah saved him, I am confident that Allah will also save me and all those of you who are in America, his people. He will deliver you as well. In October of 1985, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, preparing to make an address to the people of New York at Madison Square Garden on October the 7th. I left Phoenix on the 6th of October, and what was reported in the news was that there were 15 squadrons of four of these wheels, 60 of them, flying in the same direction I was traveling from southwest to northeast, and it was reported on National Public Radio out of Tucson, Arizona. The Army reported it, and the Army followed the planes, and they reported this. According to the Pima County Library of Tucson, Arizona, in their filings named UFO Sightings Reported in Tucson, it is written, and I quote, October 7th, 1985, Federal aviation radar operators at Tucson International Airport reported tracking 15 groups of aircraft, at least 60 in all, as they flew from the Avra Valley area in the southwest across the city and out through Reddington Pass. In another record held by the group UFO DNA, who refer to themselves as the Encyclopedia of UFO Sightings, they recorded that on the 7th of October, 1985, at 0015 hours, that means 15 minutes after midnight, certain police helicopter incident, airport radar detected about 60 unidentified aircraft over a 90-minute period. Dozens of witnesses also saw them. Appeared southwest, speed 288 miles per hour, 7,000 feet altitude, 15 groups of four objects per group. Wow, no military objects were tracked by radar. Now listen, if these wheels were traveling at 288 miles per hour, they wanted to be seen. They wanted us to see them because they travel at speeds that no supersonic jet by any country in this world has developed that can fly at the speed of these wheels. So they wanted you to see them. Traveling southwest to northeast behind the representative of the Son of Man. It was the Arizona Daily Star of Tucson that reported the sighting in its newspaper October the 9th, 1985, which reported the incident, making it known to the world. As I related these events during the interview at the Washington Post, Mr. Ben Brantley, executive editor of the Washington Post, leaned over to Donald Graham and whispered, "He knows. He knows. He knows." He said it three times. Continuing my answer to the Washington Post's question on the business of the wheel, on February 5th, 1986, Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael, representing 15 groups, asked me if I would participate in a press conference at the National Press Club with the theme, Hands Off Libya. I agreed. I went to Washington, wrote the speech. It was approved by Kwame Ture, and in front of 15 groups and the world media, we mentioned Hands Off Libya. I was a part of that press conference at the Washington Press Club in February, not in obedience to my experience on the wheel, because the meaning of it had not yet crystallized for me at that time. But the buildup against Muammar Gaddafi under Ronald Reagan had started. And while I was traveling in Africa, it became clear to me that the nation that the president was planning a war against was Libya. So I went to Libya. I canceled my world tour, sent my family and laborers back to America, and I went on to Libya on a Russian Aeroflot jet to warn Muammar Gaddafi of America's plans to bomb his country. That night, in my hotel suite in Tripoli, Libya, the top echelon of the Libyan government, except Muammar Gaddafi and Major Abdul Salim Jalloud, were in my suite, and I told them what I learned in my vision-like experience from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and when I finished, they literally fled out of my room. And within a month, America bombed Libya. The fight started 2 weeks before the actual bombing took place, but something happened, and one of the great aircraft carriers had to go back to Florida for repairs. And it came out in the Arab newspaper in Saudi Arabia that a bright, shining object was seen over the Mediterranean. I called back to the United States even before I read that article in Saudi. I said the wheel is present in the Mediterranean and it's interfering with the highly sensitive electronic equipment on that aircraft carrier. And that aircraft carrier had to go back to Florida for repairs, and a similar aircraft carrier was sent to Libya in its place. That gave me time to leave Libya and go to Saudi Arabia. I wish to stop a moment for my response in the Washington Post interview to relate a significant event that occurred after my announcement and warning in Libya of President Reagan's plans. While I was in Libya in March of 1986, I spoke at the Second World Mithaba Conference. Muammar Gaddafi asked me if I would introduce him. And I said yes, and in my introduction to Muammar Gaddafi, I told for the first time my vision-like experience, but it was first revealed on a world stage in front of about 80 nations. And every one of the members of these nations had already known about these wheels. And I warned President Reagan from Tripoli, Libya at the time. I warned Attorney General Meese at the time and Secretary of State Shultz at the time that they should not attack Libya. Prior to my trip, the Attorney General of the United States at that time Mr. Edwin Meese said in a Chicago newspaper that if I went to Libya, that Farrakhan should be prosecuted. Once I returned from my trip to Libya, we, the Nation of Islam, on June 25th, 1986, filed a lawsuit in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., suing the United States government over their threat of criminal prosecution. We sued the President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, George Shultz, his Secretary of State, James Baker, his Secretary of the Treasury, and Edwin Meese, his Attorney General, in court. The government backed away from their threat by saying they did not intend to prosecute. The court, in its decision to dismiss the lawsuit, said that although the Attorney General made the statement, there was no other action that indicated the government was seeking or preparing to prosecute the minister. This is very important because we challenged the United States government, and at that time, they backed away. Returning to my response to the Washington Post interview. And now in 1987, the same Washington Post, New York Times magazine section, and on the front page of the Atlanta Constitution, it read, America plans war with Libya. And right in the text of the reporting, it said, President Reagan met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff early in September to plan a war against Libya. And it went on to say that the American ambassador to Egypt was to ask Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak that he should use Egyptian troops to attack Libya from the east, and America would give air cover to the operation. And Hosni Mubarak backed out of it. This was reported. And so that verified for me the truth of my vision-like experience. I thought that the vision was over and I had satisfied what was asked of me. And last year, 89, while I was in Phoenix, Arizona, I looked on the television and there I saw tanks rolling over Chinese youth in Tiananmen Square. I had rested and I was feeling very good. And when I saw that, I got intensely sick. And on the same day, Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran passed away. I didn't know the connection. I just know that I got sick. And when I came back to Chicago, I looked like an old man drained because there was something in that that I was to learn. Later, my East Coast representative, Brother Don Muhammad, called me on the telephone. Don Muhammad is a man honored in Boston by the mayor, the police chief, everybody in that city as an upstanding, outstanding citizen. This brother called me and said that the gangs had shot up a section of Boston, and this gang violence, we were fortunate that no one was killed, but $250,000 worth of property was destroyed. And the gang leaders told Brother Don, who was intervening to bring peace, that if Brother Farrakhan tells us to put the guns down, they would put them down. So Minister Don was asking me to send the gang leaders a message. And when I put the phone down with him, I started thinking, well, I didn't tell them to pick up the guns. Why should I tell them to put the guns down? And knowing that I'm under this kind of investigation from our government, I thought that that may be a trap. And then I came out as I started dictating a letter to my secretary concerning Boston. The strain started coming off me. And in that I said that there's a war being planned against black youth by the government of the United States under the guise of a war against drugs and gangs and violence. It still hadn't dawned on me the full connection. But as Gaddafi was to Reagan, Farrakhan was to Bush Sr., to Bush Jr., and to President Barack Obama. I went back out to Phoenix, and Mickey Leland, the congressman from Houston, was killed in a plane crash in Ethiopia. Something struck me. I don't know what it is, but I'm made sick again. And finally, in September, on my 36th wedding anniversary, I got a call and the person says, "Happy anniversary." I said, "Oh yes, my wife and I have been married for 36 years. And they said, "No, I'm not talking about your marriage. I'm talking about the anniversary of your vision." And then it all clicked for me. President or Vice President Bush at the time made a statement to the Simon Wiesenthal Center where he didn't call my name, but he described me as an anti-Semite. And the murder of all those babies in Tiananmen Square, President Bush never took a strong stand against that slaughter. Not to this day. And right after the slaughter, he sends on a secret mission National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft and others into that area. The Senate, the Congress is coming down on China, but not Mr. Bush. Why? I asked. And then I said, it's a ratio in proportion. As Gaddafi was to Reagan, Farrakhan is to Bush. And now Farrakhan is to Obama. Our government has killed Muammar Gaddafi. And I think they're planning something similar for me. I held the press conference in Washington, D.C., and I charged Bush 41 with hatching this kind of a plan. My mind goes to scripture because that's my orientation. Pharaoh said, "Let's deal wisely with them." Pharaoh had a plan against Jews. And I said at that editorial meeting, every Jewish person in this boardroom, and there were several, knows that according to the scripture, that plan was to kill all the male children of Israel and spare the females. And if you look at black America today, tell me if there's not a plot. Nearly 25% of our black youth in prison, now 44% of youth who are detained, 46% of the youth who are judicially waived to criminal court, and 58% of the youth admitted to state prisons. Black males destroyed in the cities. They filled the armed forces. The women are the aggressive ones. The women in college, the women in business, the women moving ahead. But the black man is crushed. And so I maintain that what my father and teacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, was revealing to me and telling me to reveal to the world was not only the plan of Reagan, but the plan of Bush, 41, the plan of Clinton, the plan of Bush, 43, and even the plan of our present president and the government of the United States of America. Mr. Reagan took a black man, an upstanding, sincere, committed black man like General Colin Powell, jumps over 30 other people and puts Colin Powell in as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I maintain that he was there for a reason, and this is what I said to the Washington Post. I don't think Colin Powell was in on the planning for the thing that went down in Panama. I think that came out in the press. But who did they trot out to defend the action? Because it was black people being killed in Panama. I remind you. And so a black man, a sincere, committed American, is used to justify the bombs that fell in Panama. And I say right now, the mood is created for the killing of black people. Is there a plan? I believe there is. And I believe that what was revealed to me on that wheel, that it is the truth. And I am saying to President Bush, I'm saying to America, and I'm also saying to President Obama, don't go that way. Because there is a bigger power, and you're going to have to answer for everything that you do. We're in a serious time, a serious condition, and I pray God in the name of His servants, the prophets, and I pray that Allah God will open your hearts to what I've said and the manner in which I have said it, and I pray that we as intelligent, reasonable, sane human beings will see what is at stake here and stop demonizing me and let me do my work and let's sit down and map out a strategy to save black people and possibly to save this nation. So, in my conclusion, that ended my editorial board meeting with the Washington Post. So as you can see from my answers to the questions put to me about the wheel, that Allah God was guiding me to more fully reveal the knowledge of the hidden meaning behind the actions of government at that time concerning the plot to destroy black youth, especially the black male, and the desire of the U.S. government to kill Louis Farrakhan and destroy the Nation of Islam. Allah God also blessed me in the full interview to address several other areas dealing with black people's condition, the wickedness of our enemies, and the need for separation and independence. What Allah God revealed to me from my experience on the wheel guided me to meet with youth gang leaders in June of 1989 in Chicago, where I shared with them my experience on the wheel and the plan to destroy black males under the guise of a war on drugs. Quentin Tarantino, the Hollywood director of Django Unchained, in a Hollywood Reporter article on December 19th, 2012, said, "This whole thing of this war on drugs and the mass incarcerations that have happened pretty much for the last 40 years has just decimated the black male population." The filmmaker said on George Strombolopoulos tonight. It's slavery. It's just slavery through and through. And it's just the same fear of the black male that existed back in the 1800s. In October 1989, my Savior's Day message was Stop the Killing. And after my announcement on October 24th, a few months later, I began a Stop the Killing tour throughout the United States to warn black men about the plans of the United States government against us. In late 1993, I went to New York and spoke at the Jacob Javits Center and announced my desire to speak to men only, thus launching the men's only tour throughout the United States. And on January 24th, 1994, the first men's only meeting was held at the 369th Armory in New York. Nearly 16,000 men came, but only 12,000 could get in. And it was at this meeting that I was guided to utter the words, I want to take a million men to Washington, D.C., thus germinating the vision for the Million Man March on October 16th, 1995, where nearly 2 million men showed up, and it was the largest and most peaceful demonstration ever witnessed on the Washington Mall. That march delayed the plans of the U.S. government. Our actions on the Mall showed the world that we could be a civilized people, so that interfered with their plans. However, we have gone backwards since then. The enemy seems to have destroyed the meaning and the spirit of the Million Man March, and the killings that are going on in Chicago and in other cities of black against black is justifying a response that will be terrible in its manifestation. And because you have heard the truth and have rejected the truth, the scripture says part of our chastisement is that we will be bitten by fiery serpents and cockatrices, angry white people turning on you and killing you in large numbers. The only way you can avoid this is to stop the killing of self. Next week, inshallah, I'll show you why you don't need weapons. You can get rid of your weapons as the Nation of Islam has done. You don't need them. They want to attack us. We don't have any weapons, and we will not pick up any weapons. No, in next week's broadcast, inshallah, we will share with you the teachings of Master Farad Muhammad, given to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad about the wheel. May Allah continue to bless you, guide you, and protect you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.
On February 24th, 2013, during his Savior's Day address, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan introduced Muhammad's economic blueprint to end poverty and want.
7 days times one nickel a day, 35 cents a week. Do you have it?
Yes, sir.
Isn't that painless?
Yes, sir.
You know you don't like pain.
Yes, sir.
Look at this. 52 weeks in a year, so that amounts to $18.20 per year. And if everybody in this room, everybody listening by television, every everybody under the sound of my voice gave $18.20 a year. Multiply that by 16 million in the working force. Now we got $291,200,000 in just 1 year. $291 million. Look at the power of pennies, nickels, and dimes if all of us did this. Can you see the picture? Look. We want to do exactly as Isaiah the prophet said. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations.
With your support of Muhammad's economic blueprint, we can obtain farmland, build industry, and create jobs for our people. Through pooling our nickels, dimes, and dollars, we can rebuild the wasted cities and provide a future for our children. To support Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, go to economicblueprint.org and register now.
Are you in agreement with what we must do to end our poverty and want by accepting a program to put our nickels, dimes, and dollars together and make them work for us as a people? How many of you are in agreement? Would you just raise your hands?